Oh, I know it.
That's because of the
23.
They didn't ask you that. Boy. Profit didn't increase this year.
I don't think I paid more than $4 or something like that for mine. I'm not sure, but it's...
It's the all-time leaping book. I mean, it just jumps up every year.
Isn't that something?
$23.
Hang on to it. It's worth its weight in gold.
About 10 years ago, you could...
Yeah, really?
Michael,
right. Gonna get the Christians one way or another.
Well, I don't mind.
Well, give us more respect for the value of our studies here. Page 74, I want to continue on this discussion of cases and the various uses of the cases. We're looking at the genitive, and this one's probably got more different subcategories than any other. And we left off around the middle of page 74 here, talking about this idea of rational attributes and so forth. And section 88 says, so we may say that the root meaning of the genitive is attribution. This attribution may be either of two ways. It may employ an essential relationship. Thus, he basileia theou is the kingdom which has it as its distinguishing attribute its relationship to God. Kingdom of God. It's a relationship. It's a kingdom that has a relationship to God. And so the idea of relationship is one thing that the genitive is saying. And this is often seen in things like possession, a kingdom possessed by God, or the king, you know, if it's to be construed that way. There's a relationship there. Now, and of course, usually when you're dealing with a person somehow, and if a person is in the genitive, it's going to be pretty clearly a relationship type of situation. Then another example is, hey, cardia pistias is a heart which has as its distinguishing attribute the quality of unbelief. So quality is the other area. Either a quality, a characteristic, or a relationship can be seen by the genitive. Those are the two major areas. So the summary statement here is, therefore, the genitive defines by attributing a quality or relationship to the noun which it modifies. So that's a good summary statement of what's going on. It attributes a quality or a relationship to the noun which it modifies. Okay. Now, this next section is kind of interesting, and it's one we'll probably want to observe as we get into prepositions. Any of you that choose certain of the prepositions to do your study on can maybe want to consider this concept of contact with the genitive. In fact, that might even be a good thing to deal with in terms of just take all the prepositions and see if this holds true. But he says, when the idea of relationship receives a physical application, it becomes contact. The roof of the house is the roof on the house. Excuse me. And the grass of the field is the grass on the field. In other words, there's grass. The grass is in contact with the field. It's not hovering a foot off the ground, you know. Okay? So, in other words, when you're using a genitive to define something in this way, where you're dealing with physical objects and so forth, there's going to be contact. This significance is seen in the fact that verbs which imply the idea of taking hold of or attaining are regularly used with a genitive. So we regularly have genitive objects for verbs of taking hold of and so forth, the idea of contact. It is even more clearly seen with prepositions. Thus, epi, with the locative, signifies general position, while with the genitive, it signifies actual contact. In Matthew 9:2, the use of epi clines, upon a bed, places emphasis upon the fact that the man was actually confined to his bed, while in Luke 21:6, lithos epi litho, using the dative there, stone upon stone, contemplates a general situation when the temple stones will no longer be in their proper position. This idea applies with remarkable precision throughout the prepositions used with the genitive. That would be a good thing to test and see if that really holds true. That would be a good project for someone to dig into. But you see what he's getting at here. Upon the bed here, using the genitive, indicating the man was actually laying on the bed in contact with it. Stone upon stone here, when he's talking about the temple being cast down, there won't be stone upon stone. It's true that the stones would be in contact, but that's not so much the emphasis. The emphasis is they would no longer be in order and position anymore. There'd be a dissolution of the position. And so that's what he's getting at here. Now, this may not be the best example to use because, you know, it's a situation where there may be contact, but the agenda seems to be emphasizing contact. So that's a proposition that's worthy of test. You know, in my observation, it seems to hold up, but I haven't done a thorough study on that, trying to check every single one out. You see it in almost all the books. So when you're wanting to emphasize contact, then genitive will be used in cases where the prepositions, for example, can take more than one case. This may be hard to test in some places, like Pearls, I think. I'm not sure if it's once with a genitive or once with a dative. Most of the time it's
six times.
Yeah, it's six with one and one with the other. I can't remember which way it goes now. And then all the rest of the time is with accusative. So I don't know if you'd have a very good test case there. This FP would probably be a service, you know. Yeah, you may have to do that. So if anybody wants to take that one up and see what you come up with, I don't think anybody's done that yet that, you know, in our classes. Okay, now moving down to section 90. He's going to break down now the genitive into various subcategories of kinds of genitive. Now, obviously, they're all genitive, and they're all the same case form. But these are just grammatical observations as to how the genitive is used. And you'll find that, by and large, with maybe the exception of the genitive absolute at the end here, these are somewhat analogous to English expressions using the preposition of. And when we say something of something, we can mean almost any of these subcategories, too, depending on context. So let's look at them. Genitive of description is the first one, and that's probably the most... he calls it the most pure application of the genitive. This is clearly the use of the genitive which lies closest to its root meaning, to denote a rational attribute is to describe. In fact, this usage is so very near to the root meaning of the case that we find difficulty in fixing exact limits. All genitives are more or less descriptive. Blass correctly observes that this is the most extensive use of the genitive. When a genitive stands out boldly, in its typical significance, without shading off into a combination with some contextual idea, we then classify it as a descriptive genitive. In other words, this classification is fitting the ones that don't really involve any of these other subcategories, involve other contextual ideas and so forth, just a pure genitive idea. Many examples may be found which are perfectly distinct. So here's one example, genito Ioannes kerouson baptisma metanoias. Okay, this phrase, baptisma metanoias, preaching a baptism of repentance. The metanoias there in the genitive, he's calling an example of this descriptive genitive, telling you what kind of baptism. So it's very simple and straightforward, baptism of repentance, repentance kind of baptism. So that's the pure idea, just to what we normally associate with a genitive, just something that's giving a description and attributing something to the noun, very much like an adjective. And he gives another statement here. The adjective force of the genitive is most clearly seen when the descriptive genitive is used in the predicate in identically the same relation as the predicate adjective, as in Hebrews 10:39, hemes de uk esmen hypostoles. We are not of a shrinking back. Now, that hypostoles is a genitive form of a noun, but it's occupying a position just like a predicate adjective would have. For example, you know, we are something, and you could have put an adjective in there. Instead, they've got a genitive in this position, genitive noun, and that's quite clearly in an adjective-type position, so that's what he's getting at here, this adjective force, this descriptive force, this attributing force is being seen here, although the construction here would be, you'd probably analyze this as a predicate adjective construction and analyze your genitive noun as quite adjectival in function. Notice it's not even connected to a noun. It's just sitting there all by itself as a genitive form. Okay, any questions on that first category? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, yeah, you could get by without it. You could get by without it here. You could just have hemes de uk hypostoles. And
I thought it was some rule that you have to have the same case for the predicate, not the subject and the predicate noun. That's it.
That's normally the case, very definitely. But see, what you're having here is this genitive this genitive form of the noun is functioning like an adjective. And were that adjective an adjective, it would be in the nominative case. In other words, if we had an adjective meaning shrinking back, we would have that in the nominative case, to agree with Hemes there. But because it's the genitive form of a noun that's functioning like an adjective, it's got to have that genitive form. But and then you determine its adjectival function from the structure. In a case like this, you're probably almost always going to see the verb form to be there, just because it clarifies the structure a little bit more. But it would still be understandable without it. But you might have to take a double take, you know, and say, well, what's going on here? I was expecting nominative, and here's genitive. Okay, the second category is genitive of possession. This is probably, again, one that is quite straightforward. We've already looked at many examples of this. Attribution quite easily blends with the idea of ownership. To denote ownership is to make one noun the attribute of another in a relation of privilege or prerogative. To say, hey Biblos, the book, excuse me, is to assign a thing to a class of indefinite limits. See, there's lots and lots and lots of kinds of books possessed by lots and lots of people and so forth. So it's quite a general statement. But to say, hey Biblos, to Ioannou, John's book, is to immediately specify it in a particular way by attributing it to a certain relationship. It is the particular book owned by John. This is one of the most prevalent uses of the genitive, especially with personal pronouns. Okay, so showing possession, and that's describing something. Something that's in a broad category will be made far more specific by specifying to whom it belongs. And so the genitive is defining this thing again, more specifically with reference to who it belongs, who it belongs to. So here's another example. This one's more in a kind of a predicate construction again. Hen ton ploion ho ein simonos. Okay, one of the boats, which was Simon's. Got a relative pronoun, ho, which, ein, coitive verb, and then that Simon is in the genitive case. So which was of Simon, literally. Which was of Simon, or which was Simon's. So it's not which was Simon. The boat wasn't Simon, but the boat was Simon's, belonged to him. The boat was of Simon, you see. So you need to watch for those cases, especially on proper names sometimes, where there may not be a distinction between the genitive form and the nominative form, for example. In this one there is, but there may not be in some. And you'll have to watch out for those. Context would have to be your guide there. But again, this is again a genitive of possession. Even though it's in a predicate position here, it's the same kind of function of the genitive, showing possession. Okay, now there may be some ambiguities in some of those too. Sometimes you may say the boat which was of Simon, and in a given context, that may not mean Simon's boat. That may mean the boat that Simon built, for example. You know, if you're talking about, you know, John built a boat, and Jacob built a boat, and Levi built a boat, and Simon built a boat, and to say, I bought the boat which was of Simon, you know, it doesn't mean that you bought the one that belonged to him, but the one that was built by him. So context, again, is going to have to determine some of these things and how you tell. And unfortunately, sometimes it may be quite ambiguous which one it is, if the context doesn't tie it down sufficiently. So that's one of the hardest things, I think, in some instances, because lots of times genitives just aren't tied down that well. And that's why we're going through this, to make ourselves aware of the various kinds of ways genitives can be used, so we're aware of what possibilities exist before we too quickly conclude that it's one thing or another. Okay, third category is genitive of relationship. And this is somewhat similar to the idea gone before, although this one especially is used with reference to people and relatives, that type of thing. So you'll see what we're talking about here. In this use of the genitive, a person is defined by the attribution of some genital or marital relationship. It is closely akin to the previous use, being really the possessive genitive of a special application. In other words, we can call this the genitive possession, but of a special category of that if you want. The usual construction simply presents the article in the proper gender with the genitive of the person related, omitting the noun which indicates the relationship. Now, the noun which indicates the relationship would often be the son of so-and-so, or the father of so-and-so, or the brother of so-and-so, or whatever. That noun is often omitted, and sometimes they'll just say, you know, Simon of so-and-so, And it omits the idea of son or anything else. It relies on context to determine that, but it used the genitive. It is assumed that the relationship is known or has been made sufficiently clear by context. Thus, we should find in the Gospels Jesus ho Marias. Thus, should we find in the Gospels Jesus ho Marias, we would unhesitatingly supply huios after ho. In other words, Jesus of Mary, we would supply Jesus, son of Mary, as far as our concept is concerned. That's what it's referring to. In other words, the context has made it so clear, though, that he is the son, that it's just specifying which Jesus? Jesus of Mary, that Jesus. And so that's the way they're putting it quite frequently. This would be called a genitive of relationship. Jesus, the Mary in the genitive here indicating relationship to Jesus. Sometimes, however, the relationship is obscure to the modern reader. For example, Judas Jacobu, Acts 1:13. It's you probably guess that it's Judas the son of Jacob, but it may be brother or something else. In other words, if we don't know the relationship from other contexts and so forth from the scriptures, it may be obscure. Mm-hmm.
I can remember that Judas doesn't decline Judas.
Right.
So that could be two names of the same person in the context.
That's a possibility too. We'd have to look at the actual text to see if it fits that way. Yeah, that's in the genitive. That's in genitive. But Judas is. Yes, he's saying that Judas might be a nominative, for example, with a genitive modifier, or it may be genitive also, in which case the two could be in apposition to each other, and it would be. Huh?
Like Jesus.
Yes, right. Like Jesus Christu, it would be Judas Jacob, you know, and it's a possibility. You have to look at, you know, if you look at the actual text, it may settle it for you as far as how that thing is functioning. If it's functioning as a subject of the sentence or something like that, then we may be eliminating that. What was it, Mark?
Acts
1:13. Like there are a whole string of names and they're all the nominative.
Yeah.
So
that could be, could be two names,
something
like that.
Well, if they're all nominative, they're all listing them as nominative. Judas would have to be nominative and Jacobu would have to be modifying it. Yeah. It's got Simon, Jose, Zeletes. Yeah, they're all nominatives. Just a list of names. Yeah, but Alphaeu is Jacobos and it's modifying Jacobos.
Oh, okay.
The yeah. James of Alpheus. So there are some genitive phrases modifying other names there too. So that would probably be the case. Okay. this construction, he says, was abundantly used in colloquial Greek of the Koine period as evidenced by its frequent occurrence in the papyri. So not only in the New Testament, but in the papyri we find a very, very frequent usage of this kind of construction where the actual relationship noun is omitted and the genitive is used to specify the person that you're talking about by indicating his relationship, his or her relationship to someone else. Most frequently, I'm sure, it's going to be this, you know, father-son relationship because of, you know, the genealogies and so forth. That's what you're going to see most frequently. And here, of course, David ton to Yesai, David the son of Jesse. And of course, the word son isn't there, but David, the one of Jesse, you know, the of Jesse David. Okay. And remember, too, in their time, they didn't have what we call last names like we do. They would specify a person by reference to his father, usually. But if there was some other even more important relationship or more obvious relationship, that might be the one that you're talking about. And, of course, in a specific context, suppose like that example, Jesus of Mary. Suppose you had two men named Jesus let's consider this example. Suppose you had... And this would probably be more an unusual situation, but it would fit this type of thing where you'd suppose you had a man in the Old Testament, say, that had more than one wife, and he had sons by both wives, bunch of sons, and one wife, you know, had a son by the same name as another wife did. Then to specify which one of the wives it was from, you would say, Jacob of Rachel or Jacob of so-and-so, you know. And that could be done. Normally, you're going to see it with the father, though. That's going to be the predominant thing in their mind. Okay. Adverbial genitive, then. We've run into these already as well. This one will be broken down in three subcategories: time, place, and reference. The genitive is sometimes used to define a verbal idea by attributing local or temporal relations or as qualifying an adjective. Now, remember, adverbs can modify verbs or adjectives. So when you see a genitive doing the same kind of thing, it's got an adverbial function. Here, its attributive function is still clearly present, for it is kind of action which is being emphasized. So when you see a genitive used adverbially, when it's modifying a verbal action, it's going to tell you the kind of action that's taking place. Thus, action nuptos does not mean action at night, point of time, or during the night, limit of time, but action within the night, kind of time, or to put it literally, nighttime action. So if you use nuptos there in an adverbial function describing some kind of an action, it would be a nighttime action, a nighttime kind of action. The adverbial force of this construction is obvious, as attributes of time and place normally modify a verbal idea, and adjectives are regularly limited by adverbs. In other words, adverbs do modify adjectives quite frequently, give you, you know, they can modify the degree to which the adjective applies and so forth. This adverbial use includes A, the genitive of time. As already indicated, the significance here is a distinction of time rather than a point of time, locative, or duration of time, accusative. It is this rather than some other time. So here's an example: Hutos eothen pros auton nuptos. This one came to him in the night. And the point there is that it was a nighttime kind of coming. It was, the emphasis was that it was dark, and that's the reason that he came, is it was dark, etc. So it was a nighttime kind of coming. That's the emphasis there with the genitive. So we would call this an adverbial genitive of time. Yes, Mark?
Would it be pointing more towards the motive or the... thought behind the action that's being taken?
I think so. I think that's a good analysis of it. In other words, it's not just an incidental statement of historical narrative that it happened to be at night, but it's emphasizing that it was a night kind of coming, which would suggest that there was a purpose or motive involved in it being at night. Rather than, if you just put this in the accusative or something like that, or dative, it would perhaps be taken more incidentally. That it just happened to be at night, you know, but the fact that it's in the genitive is emphasizing that this is the kind of action, and this adverbial genitive idea has got a lot more connotation that way. I think it would certainly lend itself to more of a look, at, in this context at least, at the motives involved. Yes?
Yeah, I noticed sometimes as I've been reading, you know, I see like genitives, like here it's towards him of night,
mm-hmm.
you know, if we were to translate it a little
yes.
bit. I've seen a lot of times it's been somewhat difficult to reconcile.
Right.
And I guess so that if these types of situations are, I'm going to have to find out what my flexibility is
yes.
and make it into an English idiom.
Sure. This is a good example of where translating it. Most of the time, a genitive can be translated with of in English, but there are a few times like this where this can be very awkward. You can understand this certain. How would you do this? He came to him. I don't know if there's really any good way in English to get that idea across except saying by night or nightly, you know, in the nighttime kind of coming. Any other thing is going to get a little bit different idea there. So this is a good example. If you translate it literally, you're going to really miss the idea that's involved there, just because English and Greek aren't lining up on this issue. Now, as far as the Greek genitive idea is concerned, the genitive idea is just the same as it's been elsewhere in Greek. It's just that in English, we're not accustomed to using the preposition of in a situation like this. We don't use the preposition of so much in these adverbial constructions. But the concept of qualification of the action is still there. In fact, in a certain way, what's happening is that the whole action is being substantivized and a genitive modifier is being applied to that substantivized action. In other words, the whole coming to him, that whole concept here is being treated as a noun. And then of night, you know, he's coming to him of night. It's a nighttime kind of coming to him, just like any other genitive might modify a noun. So, but we call it adverbial because the thing was a verbal idea that's being modified as far as the end result is concerned. Structurally, though, it's just the whole thing is being substantivized. Okay. Then there's genitive of place. In this use, the sense of contact is prominent, but attribution is still the emphatic point. when a kinase is used in Luke 19:4, it is that way rather than any other way that Jesus is expected to come. So Jesus is expected to come that way and that way. So it's specifying that particular way and that particular place and mode and so forth. Homer uses luestai potamoio to indicate bathing in a river rather than anywhere else. That is, he defines the bathing by attributing in the genitive the place at which it occurs and distinguishes it as river bathing. It is clear that the idea of bathing has kinship with the thought of a river, and therefore potamoio is a rational attribute. Well, in other words, it makes sense that you would bathe in a river. Okay, now here's an example from the scriptures. Hina bapse to akron to doctulu autu hudatos, that he might dip the tip of his finger in water. Okay, and the genitive that they're pointing out here is hudatos, in water. And of course the preposition in isn't there. So this is a genitive adverbial modifier. How is he dipping his finger in water? It's a water kind of dipping the finger. That's the idea. And it's genitive, in this case it would be a place, and it would be one of these adverbial genitives. Okay. Then genitive of reference, that's a little bit more general. That's the kind of thing that if you don't know what else it is, you call it that. It's a reference of some sort. The genitive sometimes used with adjectives refer their qualifying force to certain definite limits. Thus, ischuros pisteos means strong with reference to the matter of faith. And be strong in faith, something like that, or faithfully strong. It's a faith kind of strength, is the idea. The adverbial force is obvious. In other words, it's faith with reference to strength. Strength with reference to faith. Strength with reference to faith. Somehow faith is the reference qualifying this strength. And most of the time it's translated in English something like strong in faith or something. But again, more literally, something like faithfully strong or strong with reference to the matter of faith, something would be a little bit more straightforward as far as a detail if you're doing exegesis. And again, the adverbial force here, it would be seen more in this case in terms of an adjective modifying an adverb modifying an adjective. This isn't a verbal idea purely, but it's an adjective. Strong is an adjective. And then strong, how strong and what way strong? Strong with reference to faith. So remember from your previous understanding, I hope anyway, that adverbs can modify both adjectives and verbal ideas. And for example, you know, if you want to say very strong, very would be an adverb modifying the adjective strong, which would modify some other noun. He was a very strong man. You know, the strong would be an adjective modifying man. Very would be an adverb modifying strong. In this case, strong in faith. He was strong in faith. You might have a predicate adjective construction. He was strong, and then of faith, or with reference to faith, as an adverbial genitive modifier to the adjective. Okay, any questions on that? Here's another example. Cardia ponera apistias, a heart with evil with reference to unbelief. And King James is an evil heart of unbelief. You can get that of unbelief involved there in the way they translate it. But it's a heart evil with reference to unbelief. And so we've got a heart evil with reference to unbelief. And that unbelief there is modifying the evil, and that's modifying heart. Okay, did you have something, Greg?
I was just wondering, it seems like it's the faith that's being modified, or the faith is being, if you're saying strong of faith,
mm-hmm.
is that, am I perceiving that the right way? Because then it says down here, faithfully strong, and it all looks like there is the strongness that's being modified.
Yeah, it really is strong. It is strong that's being modified by faith. Even in the first example, if you say strong with reference to faith or strong of faith, the point is that it's what kind of strong is it? See? It's not what kind of faith it is. You could perhaps turn it around and make faith and then faith of strength, something like that. But the point of this is you're qualifying what kind of strength it is. It's a strength in the realm of faith. Might be strong in the realm of the flesh, you might be strong in the realm of the mind, but here this one's strong in the realm of faith. So faith really is your qualifier to the adjectival idea of strong, telling you what kind of strong. What kind of strong is he? Strong of faith, that kind of strong, faithfully strong. See. Okay. Now, the fifth category is genitive with nouns of action. And this is going to be broken down into two subcategories, your subjective genitive and your objective genitive. These are quite interesting ones, and these are some that generate some ambiguity. In fact, I don't even agree with the example he gave. I would reverse it. You can see what I'm getting at here. Sometimes the noun defined by the genitive signifies action. In this construction, the noun in the genitive indicates the thing to which the action is referred, either as subject or as object of the verbal idea. Okay, this will happen especially with either infinitives or nouns that have been derived from a verb, for example, where the noun itself is denoting some kind of an action. And when that noun is denoting an action, then the genitive phrase modifying that noun may be the performer of the action, or it might have been the receiver of the action, in which case it'll be either subjective genitive or objective genitive. Look at the example here, first of all, the subjective genitive. We have the subjective genitive when the noun in the genitive produces the action, being therefore related as subject to the verbal idea of the noun modified. Okay? He gives the example, to kerugma Jesu Christu, the preaching of Jesus Christ. Now, since he's calling this a subjective genitive, he must be understanding this as meaning the preaching which Jesus Christ preached. In other words, Jesus Christ was the preacher. The preaching of Jesus Christ would be, if he's taking this as a subjective genitive, it would be the preaching that Jesus Christ did. Now, I'm not so sure that that's what it's saying. I would probably analyze this as an objective genitive. It's the preaching that Paul did, Paul preached Jesus. But I didn't look at the context of this, but that's what it looks like being in Romans 16:25. Maybe I'll double check that. Maybe he's got a reason for what he's saying there. Give him the benefit of the doubt here. But it doesn't look like it's talking, you know, usually in the epistles it's not so much talking about the preaching that Jesus did. Okay. Yeah, this even confirms what I... It says, now to him to make you firm in accordance with the good news I declare and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the sacred secret and so forth. So Paul's talking about his own preaching, the gospel he's been preaching, and the preaching of Jesus Christ. I would call this an objective genitive, simply because Christ is the object of the preaching rather than the subject of the preaching. But let's suppose it said the preaching of the Apostle Paul. Okay, that would probably be a subjective genitive because Paul was the one who was doing the preaching. It wasn't other people preaching Paul, you know. Paul was preaching Christ.
Wouldn't the first to evangelion mu, wouldn't that be an objective or a subjective genitive?
Oh, the good news, yeah. Now that one could be, yes, that mu there, that, I would call that one a subjective genitive. Exactly. Yeah, the good news according to the gospel of my, according to my gospel, the gospel which I preach. In other words, this one it's a little.
If the good news can be taken as a verbal noun.
Yes, that's the point. That's just what I was going to say. Is that if you just treat it as a noun, see there is a verb evangelizo, and so this is the thing that the evangelizo results in. So it would be. This one might be a little bit fuzzier because it's not so much just a pure verbal action, but it would be in the same category if you take it that way. In other words, what you need is some sort of a noun that's denoting an action in order for the question of subjective versus objective genitive to be a relevant question. In other words, that you're trying to specify in a noun that's denoting an action, whether that action is performed by the thing in the genitive or whether the thing in the genitive is the object of the action, is the one who's receiving the action. So I'll just give this as my opinion. I think that this example here, I would analyze this as an object of genitive. Now, another example might be a better one, the love of Christ, for example, a phrase like the love of Christ. That one might be a better example because usually in that instance it's talking about the love that Christ has for us. And Christ is the object, the subject of the love. In other words, he's the one that's producing the love. But even there, depending on the context, love of Christ could be our love for him rather than his love for us, in which case it would be an object of genitive. This one is a little sticky because there are many times in which you get a phrase like the faith of Jesus Christ, for example, and that one, you know, commentators are divided on too, because it could be the faith that Jesus Christ possessed as an example for us, that we are to emulate the faith of Jesus Christ. Or it could be the faith, our faith in Jesus Christ. We are to have faith of Jesus Christ, and Jesus being the object of our faith. So that can get rather sticky at times. So you can take it for what it's worth. If you can see this as an object of genitive, fine. But in the context, I would have to take this as a subject. I think it's an object of genitive rather than a subjective. But let's look at the next example. The object of genitive. We have this construction when the noun in the genitive receives the action, being thus related as object to the verbal idea contained in the noun modified. Okay, and this one I think is a good example. Heide tu pneumatos blasphemia u aphethesetai. But the blasphemy of the spirit shall not be forgiven. Well, this is obviously not a subjective genitive. That would make the spirit doing the blasphemy. So the blasphemy of the spirit is people blaspheming the spirit of God, and the spirit would be the one who receives the action of being blasphemed. And so this would be an objective genitive. I don't think there'd be any debate about this one. It'd be a strange doctrine indeed to have the spirit doing the blaspheming. So here's an objective genitive. In this case, the thing that's in the genitive case, pneumatos, is the object of the action that's denoted by the noun blasphemia. So it's the one that's being blasphemed. Okay, so I think that's a real good clear example. With that first example, I think you could have found a better one. It's funny, I don't know. I sometimes wonder about these, whether they just kind of were racing through and found an example of genitive and threw it in, or whether they really believe that that's what it is there. Because I don't think I've ever seen any commentary suggest that that was a subject of genitive and talking about the preaching and the preaching that Jesus Christ preached. Okay. It's not that it couldn't possibly be. In other words, if the context had been talking about the many messages, if you've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount, for example, that Jesus preached, and then on the heels of that it said the preaching of Jesus Christ, then it certainly could fit, but doesn't seem to be any support in the context to me for that other idea. All right, any questions about subjective versus objective genitive? Everybody see the distinction? If not, go ahead and ask, because I want to make sure you get this one. Yes?
Yeah, I see it. I feel like for the first time I can see where it does say, like the faith of Jesus Christ
in Romans 3.
Uh-huh.
And that's always a problem. That was the one
example.
I'm
thinking now,
right.
So that can go ahead and work.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Exactly. Sure, it certainly could. And that's one of the reasons I like to spend some time on these, because it's been helpful to me, too, just to know what your options are. Because if you see a phrase translated a certain way, and it is genitive, and they translate it that way, because of the translation and the way the context flows and so forth, you may just lock your mind into one possibility and not be aware of some other possibilities that may actually fit theologically better. So I just want you to be aware of that in exegesis. Yes?
Well, that particular example could be taken any one of several.
Yes, not only just subjective or objective, but, you know, the Jesus Christ kind of faith, taking it that way. The faith possessed by Jesus Christ, you could take it as a possessive, the faith that he possessed. Probably... Yeah, just about all of these. I don't think it would fit partitive genitive or genitive absolute, but... and genitive apposition, it probably wouldn't fit because they're two different kinds of things. But most of these first ones, just that first idea of description, the idea of possession, relationship probably wouldn't work, nor the adverbial, but... subjective, objective would fit possibly, and this idea of reference even. So Those are things that we need to keep in mind. Usually your possibility is going to be limited somewhat, but and then the context itself may nail it down, or another scripture may just tell you exactly what it is. But it's things like phrases like the faith of Jesus Christ, the faith of God, the kingdom of God, even. There's just a lot of things that we need to consider, things that are especially words that by their very nature are somewhat broad and open. We have to consider these things. And another thing to always keep in mind is that the Holy Spirit may be purposely using a phrase that has a multiplicity of applications and possibilities, and may not nail it down. In some cases, you'll find a given phrase, especially one of these genitive phrases, in one context it'll be clearly one of these, in another context it'll be clearly another one in the same phrase. And it's almost as though the Spirit of the Lord intended many of these different applications to be fitting for us. Okay, but we'll be watching those, and as we go through and do some translating from time to time, I'll just raise the question, how would you analyze this genitive in terms of the things that we looked at here? Okay, genitive of apposition. A noun which designates an object in an individual or particular sense may be used in the genitive with another noun which designates the same thing in a general sense. In this construction, a thing denoted as a representative of a class is more specifically defined by attributing to it in the genitive a particular designation. Here the genitive stands in exact apposition with a noun it modifies. Thus, in he polis ephesu, the noun polis denotes a member of a class, in other words, the city. And there's lots of cities, and so this is specifying it as a member of the class of things called cities. And ephesu specifies the same member of in an individual in a particular sense. So we're talking about the city, and then when we add ephesu to it, it's specifying it more specifically than before. We're defining exactly which city of all the cities there are by giving its name. And so because of that kind of a function of definition of the city, the word ephesu is in the genitive case. And of course, in English, that's not too far-fetched. We can say the city of Ephesus. I went to the city of Ephesus. And we use the preposition of in the very, very same way. And this would be called a genitive of apposition, just because Ephesus and city are both referring to the exact same thing. In other words, in the other kinds of genitives we've looked at, we may have a genitive noun modifying another noun, but we're not saying that both nouns refer to the exact same thing. In other words, the kingdom of God. God is not a kingdom, and kingdom isn't God. We don't worship the kingdom. You see, it's not the kingdom which is God, but it's the kingdom of God. Another way the way I like to remember this genitive of apposition is this. If you can translate it, for example, the city which is Ephesus. In other words, if the thing in the genitive is referring to the same thing as the thing in the nominative, whatever the case, other case it might be in, then you've got a genitive of apposition. It's referring to the exact same thing. So the word polis and the word ephesu are both referring to the very same thing. Ephesu is giving a specific name for the more general term polis. And so I usually try to think of it as the city which is Ephesus. And this one can also run you into some interesting questions, too. I'm trying to think of a good example of one now that might be ambiguous.
What about example he gives down here?
Oh yes, the temple of his body. Okay.
Could that be just description, or?
Yeah, that one will work for what I'm looking at. The temple of his body. He spake of the temple concerning the temple of his body. Okay, we've got two somatos out too. This could be referring to the temple belonging to his body. You know, the temple is just a reference, or the temple a body kind of temple, that type of thing, and. In the context, of course, most of those things don't fit real well, make a lot of sense. So, your context is trying to narrow it down for you, and that's what you have to go by. But he spake of the temple, even in English, the temple of his body. And we're understanding that as meaning the temple which is his body. His body and the temple are referring to one and the same thing. But it could be conceivably just being the genitive. It's just qualifying what kind of temple it is, the temple of his body kind of temple. And of course, since temple is not a verbal idea, you wouldn't probably have any problem with subjective or objective genitive or anything like that. But genitive of either relationship, possession, the temple possessed by his body. But again, see, since it's the body, bodies don't usually possess things. It's people that do, but not their bodies. And so, you know, you've got semantic things that are trying to help you qualify this as well. And description might be one that would, apart from this appositional sense, be about the only thing that you might seriously consider as a possibility. But even there, there aren't very many body kind of temples, you know. And so I think it's most everybody, I don't think you'd have too much trouble identifying this as being an apposition. But there are some other ones that I wish I could think of now. I've run into them. Maybe we'll just wait until we go through and do some translating. We'll pick out some good ones, and we'll keep these, all of these, try to keep these in mind. It might be good for you, too, if you want to, rather than, you know, try to look up in Dana Manti all the time, try to remember what these, make a little chart of the breakdown of the various kinds of genitives and just use these terms, and you probably, once you see the term, you'll know, you'll remember what the concept was, and it might be handy as you're doing translating and so forth to just keep in mind what these various possibilities are. Now, different books may be using different terms to describe these and even break them down a little bit differently, but this is the basic gist of the categories of genitives that exist, and this covers it pretty well. At least get your mind in the position where you can think of the different possibilities. Okay, so genitive of apposition. Then seventhly, the partitive genitive. Partitive genitive. That one's not too difficult to discern. A noun may be defined by indicating in the genitive the whole of which it is a part. The sense of attribution is remote here, but nevertheless present. If it is said, ho Petros ein eis ton apostolon, Peter was one of the apostles, Peter is thereby defined by attributing to him a relation to a group. Hence we have in this construction the typical genitive function. Okay, so there is a sense of attribution here, but it's in the sense of specifying the group or the whole of which something is a part, hence the term partitive genitive. It's a part, it's indicating that the genitive is indicating that what you're talking about is a part of something else, and the something else that it's a part of is indicated in the genitive. So doso soi heos hemisus tes basileus mu, I will give you as much as half of my kingdom. Okay, hemisus, half, we get the hemisphere and so forth from that same root. It's anytime you see a term like half and so forth, you're almost expecting a genitive to tell you what it's half of. And so it's very, very, this is a very clear example of this idea of a partitive genitive. Tes basileus would be in the genitive, this would be a partitive genitive. It's telling you, specifying more what the half is half of. And so it does have this idea of definition. It's not quite as direct, but it's indicating the quality or character or the nature of the thing that's being expressed. Now, it's altogether possible to interpret this construction as an ablative, for it is easy to conceive of the whole as the source from which the part is taken. In construing it as an ablative, we would be supported by the fact that the partitive idea is sometimes expressed in the New Testament by apo and ek with the ablative. Now, when we get to ablative here real shortly, I don't know if we'll have time to quite get too far into it today, but you'll see why he's made that statement. The idea, he's trying to separate out this ablative idea from the genitive and specify it as separation, the idea of separation. And I'm not too worried about whether you make that separation in your mind or not. You just call this another case of the genitive. That's what a lot of them do. Some of them call the ablative genitive, you know, and put that as another category and then put it under the genitive because the form is the same. And I'm not real, you know, I'm not really strongly convinced that there's such a unique idea or, you know, such a different idea to the ablative, but we can, you know, that's a matter of debate, I suppose. Okay, I won't read any more about the, in the small print here. Let's move down to section, the eighth category here, the genitive absolute. This one you've already been exposed to, and nothing much more to be said here than what you've already learned. Remember the construction where you had a noun and a participle, both in the genitive case, that were not grammatically related to the rest of the sentence. So a noun and participle in the genitive case not grammatically connected with the rest of the sentence are called a genitive absolute. It is possible to construe this as an ablative absolute after the analogy of Latin, but the variety of usage as to case in this construction exhibited by the Indo-European languages prevents any positive conclusion. Well, that's probably not worth considering too deeply. In Sanskrit, we have genitive, locative, and instrumental absolute. Must be an interesting language. While modern Greek has a nominative absolute, we've already... Well, I guess we haven't really looked too much at that. We will a little bit later. There's no particular reason against calling the construction here a genitive absolute, especially since it's in the genitive case. Okay? Now, so that the whole point here is just reminding you back of the genitive absolute construction. And kaiek plethentos tu daimoniou elalesen ho kophos. And the demon having been cast out, the dumb man spoke. Okay, this is... grammatically, there's no connection between demon having been cast out and the dumb man spoke. Not grammatically, certainly semantically there is a connection. But demon is in the genitive case, and blathentos is in the genitive case, and then the subject of the main sentence is the dumb man, and then the verb is that he spoke. So this is telling you a relationship between these two actions. The action of the demon being cast out and the action of the dumb man speaking. And the whole construction is kind of defining in a certain way. This gets a little bit harder to maybe put in real concrete words, but if you think about it, you can see the sense of the genitive case. The genitive case giving qualification, kind, attribution, that type of thing. The reason that genitive absolute is there, it's certainly there for a reason in reference to the action that's taking place. It's not grammatically connected, but it's telling you the kind of circumstances under which this action took place. This action of the dumb man speaking took place under the circumstances and within the context of the demon having been cast out. And so the demon having been cast out, that whole concept is, in a sense, qualifying the action that's taking place. It's not just coming along and saying the dumb man spoke, but it's saying that the demon having been cast out, the dumb man spoke. And that whole action is, you might even call it a case of an adverbial genitive, you know, that whole adverbial, that genitive absolute is a construction that's giving either the place or the reference or the circumstances or whatever under which the other action took place. So that may be something to consider as well. Okay. Questions?
I don't know if this is a particularly good example of using here, but it looked like there was an ambiguity when they kayaked by Bentos to the demonio. It's like, by Bentos just says, it's a participle.
Right. Genitive participle, singular.
Passive.
Mm-hmm.
So, of the demon, why couldn't it be something unspoken, something being cast out of the demon?
Well, that is a possibility if you have... See, with a participle, just like any other verb, you can understand the subject involved. You could say something like, and he having been cast out of a demon... You know, the trouble with that is, if the verb cast out took a genitive object, then you might have a very real case here. But because this verb doesn't take a genitive object, it would take an accusative. Then your tu daimoniou doesn't really fit in.
It wouldn't work. It was just a passive verb, but it's a participle, so it's the one having been cast out.
Mm-hmm.
Of the demon is describing it. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So it is the one having been cast out.
Mm-hmm.
And then this genitive is being applied to it. So it's like within the realm of the demon.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's like it's something else is being cast out of the realm of the demon.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. I think it's a lot easier to take it the first way. In other words, what I'm saying is that there may be in some circumstances, you know, depending on the semantics involved, a possibility of a confusion on a situation like that. And this one, I don't think I would worry about it too much.
In a particular use of a construction.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to run into problems like that?
Well, I don't think you'll run into too many, just because there are not that many genitive absolutes. But I will grant you that there may be a possibility under some circumstances, depending on the semantics, and especially if the verb in question took a genitive object or something, that might be a situation where you really have a question.
Okay.
Because then you wouldn't be sure.
You can put in the parts and carry over the genitive.
See, the fact that you see your genitive here, if it's in the genitive, and if it's obviously an isolated construction of genitive absolute, unless the verb takes a genitive object, you're not going to have too much trouble. And especially with a passive construction here, you're not really going to have the agency stated directly except, you know, using Hugh Paul, another genitive, and you'd have a preposition there to specify that. Okay, well, we'll stop here. We'll look at the ablative and the rest of these. The genitive took the most time because it's one we really wanted to... It's one with the most ambiguity.